Welcome to Shiur and Svarno Parshas Kisetze. We're going through the various mitzvos that appear in Parshas Kisetze, many, many mitzvos that appear in Parshas Kisetze. And as we spoke about over the past couple of days, the Svarno tells us that whereas in Parshas Shoftim the focus was more on mitzvos that were relevant to the leadership of Klal Yisrael, here the mitzvos are things that apply to pretty much every person. And there are a few very noteworthy, unique approaches that the Svarno takes in explaining some of these mitzvahs. So, take one example. In Perichov Gimel, Pasuk Chof Aleph, really starting with Pasuk Chof, we read, Lo sashich lo achicho neshech kesef neshech ochel neshech kol dover asher yishach. The Torah prohibits charging interest, and the Torah prohibits paying interest. In other words, the prohibition is both on the malva, the one lending the money, as well as the lova, the one who is returning the money. The pasuk then continues in Chof Aleph, La nachri sashich, ulachicha lo sashich. When dealing with a non-Jew, one does involve interest in the loan. However, with your brother, with your fellow Jew, their interest is prohibited. In order that Hashem should bless you in everything that you're involved in, on the land that you're coming into to inherit in Eretz Yisrael. What's the meaning of the two words, la nochri sashich, that you should charge interest in terms of your dealings with a non-Jew? So there's a big machlokas, a big debate over here between the Rambam on the one hand and the frequent critics of the Rambam, the Ravid and the Ramban, on the other hand. The Rambam understands that there is a positive mitzvah to proactively charge interest when lending money to a non-Jew. It doesn't have to be a lot of interest. You could charge a nickel, a dime, whatever it happens to be. But you should davka charge interest when lending money to a non-Jew. That's what the pasuk means. La nachri sashich, meaning charge interest when you're lending money to the non-Jew. Why should that be? Doesn't sound, you want to, fine, but why should it be a mitzvah to charge money to the non-Jew? So the way the Sefer HaChinuch, who very often codifies the mitzvahs in accordance with the position of the Rambam, the way that he explains it is that by making a point of charging interest to the non-Jew, we're accentuating the fact that we have a special relationship with our fellow Jews. And as the Chinuch and others explain it, really fundamentally there's no reason why you shouldn't be able to charge interest on a loan from an ethical perspective. You're not taking advantage of the person by charging interest on the loan. Money has value when it's in your possession. By the person taking the money that was yours for a period of time, even if he's going to give it back, he's ultimately using your object. He's, in a sense, preventing you from being able to use that money. So the same way that there's nothing ethically wrong with renting out an object that you have, there shouldn't be any ethical problem renting out the money that you have. Fundamentally speaking, interest isn't something that's evil. It's a special sign of the relationship between two Jews that we're not allowed to charge interest or to pay interest on a loan to a fellow Jew because we view ourselves as being all family with one another. You know, when you deal with family, you don't, the relationship between two family members is hopefully not a business relationship. Sometimes it is, but that's bad. You know, hopefully it's a friendly relationship. And the relationship between Jews should always be a family relationship, not a business relationship. Therefore, interest is prohibited. But to accentuate the fact that there's this difference between the way we relate to our fellow Jews and the way we relate to the rest of humanity, the Rambam says we should davka. There's a mitzvah to davka, to specifically charge interest when lending money to a non-Jew. The Ramban, on his comments on the Sefer HaMitzvos of the Rambam, the Ravid there in Mishneh Torah, the Ramban over here in his comments on Chumash, the Ramban in multiple places really, argues on this Rambam, and he says, no, all the posuk means to say, la nachri sashich, is that you are allowed to lend money with interest to the non-Jew. It's not telling you you have to. It's telling you that you're allowed to lend money to the non-Jew, as opposed to l'achicha lo sashich, to your brother, to your fellow Jew, you're not allowed to lend with interest. It's interesting to note that the Radak, who was a contemporary of the Ramban, the Radak was the preeminent commentary on Nach with David Kimchi, so it's also a contemporary of the Ramban in Spain in the 1200s. The Radak and his commentary on Tehillim actually indicates that it would be meritorious to refrain from lending money to a non-Jew with interest. Again, you can't say that it's prohibited, but it's meritorious. In the Pasuk in Tehillim that describes the Tzaddik and says about him, Kaspo b'neshech lo nosan, that he didn't lend out his money with interest. So the Radak comments that what the Pasuk in Tehillim is saying is that this righteous person not only observed the halacha, I mean, we take it for granted that he observed the halacha, that you're not allowed to lend a fellow Jew with interest, but Kaspo b'neshech lo nosan, he didn't even give out his money with interest to non-Jews, writes the Radak. According to the Rambam, that wouldn't be a sign of piety, that would be a violation of an Issa Daraisa. So it's clear that the Radak as well holds, like his contemporary the Ramban, that certainly there's no prohibition lending money with interest to a non-Jew. And more than that, you know, the Radak actually understands that it's exemplary, you know, to refrain from lending money to even to a non-Jew with interest. All of this is background for the fascinating third approach that the Svarno takes in this pasuk. Right? The Svarno kind of comes out of left field. The Svarno on this pasuk says as follows. The pasuk says, "Lanochri sashich, titein lo haribis im hisneso imo velo tivgod." Pay back the interest to the non-Jew if that was your agreement, and don't default on the interest. What the Svarno has done over here is to read the pasuk the polar opposite of the way the Rambam did, but even in a very different way than the Rambam did. What does the word tashich mean? So we know it's a word that has something to do with a loan, but what is it describing? Is it describing the lending of the money or the repaying of the money? So the Rambam and the Ramban, and the Ravid for that matter, all understand that the word tashich means the act of lending out the money. So lanochri sashich either means you must lend money with interest to the non-Jew, per the Rambam, or you may lend money with interest to the non-Jew, per the Ramban and the Ravid. The Svarno understands the word tashich as paying back the money, and the pasuk is directed not to the one who lent the money, but rather to the one who borrowed the money. And the Torah is telling a Jew who borrowed money from a non-Jew and made up that he would pay back the money with interest, make sure you pay back the money with interest. Don't stiff the non-Jew who lent you the money for the interest. Lo tivgo, don't be unfaithful. Anochri sashich, pay back the interest that you made up that you were going to give to the non-Jew. So what's the chiddush of that? What's novel about that? So let's continue reading a little bit and we'll see. Ulachicha lo sashich. The pasuk goes on to say, don't give interest when dealing with your brother. So again, according to the Svarno, this means that we're talking from the perspective of the borrower, right? Do pay back interest to the non-Jew from whom you borrowed money. Ulachicha lo sashich, but don't pay back interest to the Jew from whom you borrowed money. Afal pishe isnei sa'imo. Even if you made up with the Jew that you were going to borrow money on interest. In other words, you violated an isser, right? In other words, you made up when you borrowed the money from the Jew that you're going to pay back with interest. So you say, okay, well, you know, a deal's a deal. No, a deal's not a deal. In this case, a deal goes against the Torah. So you're not allowed to pay back the Jew with interest, even had you made up to do so. V'sha'ato misratze l'poro. And even if you're totally comfortable paying him the interest, you know, you say, look, you did me a favor, I'm happy to give you the interest. Aser l'chol oseis lo ribis. Even though you're not being squeezed for the interest, you're willingly giving the interest to this Jew who lent you the money, you're not allowed. You're not allowed under any circumstances. L'achicha lo sashich. What's the end of the pasuk? L'man yivarechacha Hashem Elokecha. Hashem should bless you with everything. Says the Svarno, what's the nature of that bracha? Kishelo tivgod banachri. The end of the pasuk that says "Leman yivarechecha," you'll get a bracha if you act in this way, is not really talking about the failure to charge or to give interest when dealing with a Jew, which is on the surface what you would think the pasuk is talking about. "Leman yivarechecha," Hashem will bless you for removing interest in your interactions with a Jew. No, that's not the pasuk. The pasuk is talking about kishalo tivkod banochri. When you're careful, having borrowed money from a non-Jew on interest, when you're careful to pay back the money with the interest, the way you made up, so Hashem will give you a bracha, because v'lo techalil es Hashem, because you will have avoided chilul Hashem, desecrating God's name, which would be the result of your failing to pay back the interest when you pay back the money to the non-Jew. It's a very, very interesting way of reading the pasuk or the two psukim according to the Svarna. So let's go to the question that Rav Moshe raised before. So what's the chiddush? La nachri sashich. According to the Svarna, that means if you borrow money from a non-Jew and you made up to pay interest, you have to pay back all the interest. Why would I think that you don't have to pay back the interest? So it would seem the way the Svarna is discussing the two psukim as a whole, it's not so much that you have a valid hava amina. It's not that you have a valid prospective way of looking at the world that, you know, would justify not giving back the interest to the non-Jew. You entered into a monetary agreement with the non-Jew. You signed a piece of paper. You didn't sign a piece of paper. You have to give back the interest. That's what you promised. The Torah, rather, is just highlighting two things about the fact that you have to give back the money to the non-Jew when you borrow from him, that you have to give back the interest to the non-Jew. Number one, that in the case that you were dealing with a Jew, this would not be permissible. Even if you argue, look, I made up to give back the Jew interest. You know, we had a deal. I don't mind giving him the interest. In contrast to la nachri sashich, la chicha lo sashich, so it's mentioned as a matter of contrast. And the second thing, according to the Svarno, is the bracha that comes at the end. The Torah is focusing, according to the Svarno, on the fact that you have to be honest in your dealings, with the non-Jew, not simply because it's the right thing to do, but in addition to all of that, if you're not honest in your dealings with the non-Jew, there's a terrible chilul Hashem that will come about as a result, and the reward for creating a kiddush Hashem, the opposite of a chilul Hashem, is l'mani v'arechecha. So you have to be steadfast to your word, because then HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to bless you. It's not so much that you would really have that there's any way to justify not giving back the interest to the non-Jew, but by focusing on that and focusing on the result of acting in that appropriate manner, the Torah is hammering home that besides the monetary issue itself, there's a Kiddush Hashem, Chilul Hashem issue over here that has to be taken into account. It's very interesting in terms of this reading of the pasuk. So we pointed out that the Svarno seems to read the pasuk just grammatically differently than the way the Rambam and the Ramban do. Right? The Rambam and the Ramban both understand la nachri sashich means something about lending money with interest to the non-Jew, whereas the Svarno clearly understands la nachri sashich is describing paying back the non-Jew with interest. It's talking about from the perspective of the Lova, not the perspective of the Malva. Interesting to note, there's another commentary on the Chumash, who, without giving the Svarno's pshat, but seems to agree with the Svarno in terms of the grammar in the pasuk. It's a perhaps obscure commentary on the Torah, but I'll throw it out there. It's possible you might have heard of him. Rashi. Rashi seems to say like the Svarno. What does Rashi write? Rashi writes on Pasuk Chaf, Lo Sashich, As Hara Lilove Shelo Yitain Ribis Lamalve. Right? When the Pasuk says in Pasuk Chaf, Lo Sashich Lo Achicha Neshech Kesef Neshech Ocha, the first Pasuk, don't be Mashich to your brother, any kind of Neshech, says Rashi, the pasuk is talking from the perspective of the lover, the borrower. Because from the perspective of the malva, the lender, that was already covered in a pasuk back in Parshas Kedoshim. Es kaspecha lo siteng lo b'neshech. So don't give your money to someone else with ribbis, with interest. So that's talking about from the perspective of the lender. Here, says Rashi, we're talking about from the perspective of the borrower. So if Pasuk Chaf is talking about from the perspective of the borrower, in other words, lo sashich le'achicha, so then it stands to reason that the following Pasuk that uses exactly the same terminology, lanachri sashich ulachicha lo sashich, would be talking about from the perspective of the borrower as well. Again, Rashi doesn't spell out the pshat the way the Sfarno does, but the Sfarno seems to be working in conjunction with Rashi's understanding of the psukim, and the Rambam and the Ramban are going in a different direction in terms of how to translate the word tashich. As the Ibn Ezra points out over here, the word tashich is a funny word because it could be used both to describe the act of lending with interest as well as the act of returning the money with interest. It's a word that kind of cuts both ways, and that leads to the different commentaries, the different interpretations that we have over here. Okay, so that's on that pasuk. It's an interesting question. According to the Rambam says that when you lend to a non-Jew, you should davka lend with interest. So if I'm borrowing money from a non-Jew, should I also make a point of saying that I'm going to give the interest? Right? Does it cut both ways? Right. You can say thank you, right? You know, so with a Jew, there's a Shiloh where you can say thank you when you're returning the loan. It's interesting. I understand the logic to say that it should apply both ways. My impression is that the Rambam only requires it when lending the money, not when borrowing the money. Maybe because the Rambam, just on a practical level, understands that the borrower isn't always in a condition to be able to set the terms of the loan. I think, again, Sarachiyim, but I think the Rambam only talks in terms of the lending, not in terms of the returning the money. Yeah. That's the simple pshat in the pasuk in Behar, right? It's kasbucha lo siteng lo b'neshach v'chei achicha imach. In other words, that Chazal actually explained v'chei achicha imach in a different way. They understand it to mean that I should, you know, try to send business in the direction of Jewish clients where it's appropriate. But you know, the simple pshat in the pasuk in Behar v'chei achicha imach, you know, is don't charge him interest so that it will make his life easier. That's a simple pshat in the psukim. Okay.
How would this sort of deal with the workaround?
Well, you know, you can't be against the principle because then the Sfarno would be arguing with Hillel, right? So it's interesting to note. I mean, again, the principle is not really the discussion over here. The principle was Pashas Re'e, but just... Right, but just in terms of Prusbul, it's important to note the following. I just don't want to dwell on it because it's a little bit off topic, but it's important to note the following. Hillel instituted the Prusbul when he saw that people were reluctant to lend money to others because the Shemitah would cancel the loan. So basically what Hillel did is he instituted an enactment to preserve the spirit of Torah when people were going against it. The spirit of the law in canceling loans at the end of the Shemitah year is to enable people to be to not drown in debt, you know, to make people's lives livable. But at a certain point in history, it had the opposite effect. You know, the Torah's insistence on canceling the loan meant that nobody was lending money to begin with. And, you know, it ended up hurting people as opposed to helping people. So what Hillel did with the Prusbul was simply to create a mechanism for the circumstances that had changed to allow the intent of the Torah to be preserved, even though the mechanism was going to be a little bit different, you know? So you know, any innovation, you know, has to, even if it's going to innovate a method, has to preserve the spirit and the intent of what, you know, the original halacha, you know, was with the original mechanism. Okay. There is a halacha that's conveyed in the beginning of Perek Chof Dalid. The halacha of Machzir Grushasa. Right? Marrying a woman whom you had divorced, the woman had remarried, and now that marriage ended, so the question is, in terms of the ability for the original husband to remarry her, the Torah says you're not allowed to do that. Machzir Grushasa. Kikach ish isha ba'ala. A man marries a woman. He decides to divorce her. V'chasav la sefer krisos v'nosan biyada. Right. This is where the Torah talks about the whole idea of gittin. He gives her a get. V'yatsa mibeisa v'holcha v'hoysa l'ish acher. She goes and marries another man. Usneo ha'isha acheron. The second man that she marries divorces her or dies. And now, you know, the question is, can the original husband take her back? No. Lo yuchal ba'alo harishon asher shilcho l'shuv lakachto v'yos lo l'isha. The original husband, the first husband who had divorced her, is not allowed to take her back as a wife. Why? Achare asher hu tama'a, because she has been defiled. Ki so'eva hi lifnei Hashem. It's an abomination in the eyes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What's to the extent to which we can understand the reasons behind mitzvahs in the Torah, what's the reason behind this? Why is Machzir Grushasa, why is taking back one's original wife such a terrible thing? I mean, you could make a whole story out of it, a very, very beautiful story. You know, the couple were married and it didn't work out. She went and married somebody else. But then, all of a sudden, they realized that, you know, they had been mistaken all of these years, and, you know, all of the mistakes of the past, they tried to rectify, so they got back together again, you know, scrolled to the credits. I mean, it could be a very very heartwarming kind of story, depending on how you tell it. The Torah obviously doesn't view it as such a heartwarming story. Acharei asher hu tama'a, the woman was defiled, ki so'eva hi lifnei Hashem. And the act of the first husband taking her back is a toeva, something, it's an abomination in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Why is it an abomination? What's so terrible? Right? People go through different stages in life. So maybe they weren't ready to be married when they were in their 20s, but now that they're in their 50s, you know, maybe they are ready to be married to one another. What's so terrible? What's the toeva that we're describing over here? So the Sfarno, in a few short words, changes the whole picture for us. And he bursts our bubble of whatever heartwarming story we might have seen over here. A little bit of what the Sfarno writes is also implicit in the Ramban, as so often is the case, as we've seen already throughout the year. But again, the Sfarno presents it with his very special touch. He says, "Kizeh derech mavur l'niyuf." Why is this a toeva? Why is this something that's an abomination? It says the Sfarno, the whole idea that's being described over here is an attempt to create a halachically permissible form of adultery. What's the halachically permissible form of adultery? Shigaresh ishes ishto levakoshas hanoef, shikochenu le'ezes man. Right, remember, according to the Torah, and, you know, the Sfarno lived in Italy, I believe this was the case in Italy when he lived there. According to Torah law, a man can divorce his wife without her consent. It's true that Rabbeinu Gershom came along for Ashkenazi Jews and prohibited a man divorcing his wife without her consent. But again, my understanding is in Italy, where the Sfarno lived, that was not necessarily accepted as being halacha. So certainly, according to the letter of the law in the Torah, the man can divorce his wife whether she wants it or not. So imagine the following scenario. A man is married to a woman, comes along his friend, his buddy, you know, they're drinking together one night, and says, you know, I really like your wife. Maybe I could have her for the next 6 months. Why not? You know? So the first guy says, okay, fine. What's that? So
very generous.
Right, you know. So why 6 months? 9 months? Right? So he goes, he writes her a get, delivers her a get, she's divorced, she doesn't have a say in the matter, the second guy marries her, and the second guy from the get-go, he only wanted her for 6 months. You know, I mean, this was just a fling, if you will. After 6 months, he divorces her, and now the original husband says, okay, so we all had a little bit of vacation, now it's time to go back, you know, to the original marriage. Again, in a day and age where you need the consent of both parties in order to have divorce, it would be harder to construct such a scenario. But according to the letter of the law in the Torah, that, you know, it's only the man who has to agree to the divorce, not the woman, you could really create a scenario very easily where you have a quote-unquote halachically acceptable form of adultery. That's essentially what this is. The man is, you know, passing along his wife to be used for a period of time based on a mutual consent between two men. And the Torah says, you know, the mistreatment of the woman in that fashion is toeva hi lifnei Hashem. It's something abominable before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You know, marriage is, again, marriages come on part, you know, that's true. But, you know, to be so cavalier that you're going to release your wife for a period of time, you know, have her marry somebody else, and then with the foresight of taking her back after that brief respite, you know, from the first marriage, the whole thing is just, it's abominable. It creates an attitude towards marriage which is not defensible on any level. So that, once we have that image of the story as drawn to us just in a few words by the Sfarno, we understand all of a sudden why the Torah not only prohibits machzir grusha, so taking back the first wife, but is so strong about it that to'eva hi lifnei Hashem is something abominable in the eyes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu.
Right. She can come back, but it wouldn't happen that a woman would want to be without Kupin Kedusha.
Okay,
so I'm praising the woman. Those things are like very rare.
Right. Okay, no besena. Okay, we will pick up over here. Be'ezus Hashem, Rabbi Chananah ben Akasha Omer, Ratzah Kodesh Bar.